Connect Your Modules with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the fourth episode of Robots. Today we'll be focusing on modular robots, or robots that are assembled from many smaller modules or robotic cells. We will first speak with Kasper Støy, Associate Professor at the University of Southern Denmark.
Our second interview is with Robert Fitch from the Australian Centre for Field Robotics in Sydney. Before we start, let's hear the latest big news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. Readers from our forum might already know Roboco, a household robot that can serve you beer built by Japanese brewer Asahi. In the past 2 weeks, another household robot has received a lot of attention. Built by the Fraunhofer Institute in Stuttgart, Germany, the Carobot 3 can not only serve drinks, but manipulate and transport all sorts of household items. The newest prototype can be directed by spoken commands, and it can even recognize and respond to gestures. Unlike other household robots that require complex programming, the Carobot can quickly learn to recognize new objects. Simply place an unfamiliar object in the robot's hand, and it will use laser scanners, 3D vision, and color recognition cameras to learn its shape. To help you make use of all the free time you will gain with a robot taking care of your household, Japanese researchers have developed the first ShopBot. The remote-controlled TMSUK4 will soon allow you to wander around shopping malls in New York, London, or Singapore from the comfort of your home. In last week's demo at the Izutuya department store in Kitakayushu, Japan, a sick grandmother went shopping with her granddaughter. Using the robot and a video-capable cell phone, Granny controlled her robot double and took her granddaughter for a shopping spree. Finally, and still staying in Japan, a new surveillance robot will patrol the offices of a Japanese company with the task of chasing late working employees from their desk. The robot's release coincides with last week's ruling on the recent tragic overwork death, or so-called karoshi death, of a senior car engineer. With some luck, the robot will address Japan's karoshi problem and enhance workers' social life. That's it for this episode's news. As always, you can find details, links, and videos of today's bots, including the Late Shift Bouncer, the ShopBot, and Carobot, as well as a lineup of other current household bots, on our forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks, Christine. Now let's hear from Adam, who recently spoke with Kasper Støy in Denmark about his latest heterogeneous modular robot, Odin.
Okay. Hi, Kasper Støy. Welcome to the Robots Podcast. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Kasper Støy, as you mentioned, and I'm an associate professor at the University of Southern Denmark and is currently co-directing the Modular Robotics Lab at this university.
Excellent. Modular robotics, then. Can you tell us what a modular robot is exactly, and why you would make modular robots?
Yes. So basically, a modular robot is a robot built from mechatronic modules that you can plug together to create a robot. So this is different from the way we normally design robots, because normally we design, you know, one monolithic piece of hardware, like a robot arm, and that's then our robot, and then we gain all the flexibility from programming this robot arm. Whereas in modular robotics, we basically just have these building blocks that, depending on the task, we put together to basically build a robot body that is suited for the task. Mm-hmm. And this has several advantages. First of all, of course, we are not limited to one body shape. I mean, it's not just a small mobile robot, or it's not just a robot arm. It can pretty much be any robot shape we can build with the available modules. So mm-hmm. In that sense, we can build a wide variety of robots. And then the, another thing is that, that the system is fairly robust. I mean, the system is built from many more or less independent modules, and if one breaks, then you can easily pick up a module and replace the one that is broken. And then finally, they are also kind of cheap compared to their complexity, because we have a lot of identical things in our modules, so different pieces can be mass-produced, and therefore we can keep the cost of our relatively complex robot fairly low. So I think those are the main reasons why you would want to look into modular robots.
Excellent. Well, you've done quite a bit of work in the field already, working on the Conro robot and the Atron robot. What have you learned from these robots? What are your experiences so far?
So I think it's very interesting, because I think the field as a whole has changed quite a lot in the last decade. So I think 10 years ago, we were basically looking at fundamental basic research questions. For instance, we are looking at these self-free configurable robots, which are modules that can change their own shape by basically moving the modules around inside themselves, and looking at how to control them, how to make connectors that can connect to other modules and disconnect, and these kind of things. And now in the recent years, we kind of got past that. So we certainly did not solve the problems, you know, kind of fundamentally, but we certainly found some useful solutions. And now we are kind of moving closer towards application and trying to use some of this knowledge in application settings. I don't know if you're aware of the ICRA contingency challenge.
I have not. Can you maybe explain that to us quickly?
Yes. So the idea there is that you show up in the morning of the event, and then you are given a task. So you don't know before you leave home what the task is, but when you show up, you are given a task, and then you have about 4 or 5 hours to build and program a robot for this task. This is not really simple tasks. I mean, some of them are located in a, you know, Mars habitat, where you have to create a robot that can go out on the planetary surface, of course, you know, simulated here on Earth, mm-hmm. and then go out and locate a stranded vehicle and repair some part of the vehicle and then return to the human habitat. So fairly complex tasks. And then, you know, in order to do that, we kind of forced to take you know, application more seriously. If we want to solve that kind of task, mm-hmm. we need to develop more usable modules focused on basically usability, as opposed to focusing on understanding basic research questions.
I see. And so you recently participated in this competition?
Yes. So it was actually running, was it last week? I think it was last week, yes.
Can you tell us about the robot that you brought with you?
So this is also one of the developments. So we actually brought quite a lot of robots. So until now, most modular robots have been homogeneous. That is, all the modules are basically identical, you know, the same electronics, same mechanics, and so on. Mm-hmm. Whereas these days, in order to solve these more complex tasks, we need many different types of modules. So we brought, I guess you can say, 5 different robots. We brought the Atron, our self-free configurable robot. We brought our Odin modular robot, which is a new robot we are developing. And then we brought Lego pieces and duct tape and various other electronics component that we, on the fly, in those 4 or 5 hours, integrated into the system to solve the task.
So you used all of these robots together, actually, for the same task, or did you try each robot at the same task and see which one did better?
We integrated everything. So these, you know, these different systems have different strengths. So, for instance, our Atron modules turned out to be a very good platform to build robots able to locomote from. So you could build a small car or a small walker from these modules. Mm-hmm. Whereas our Odin modules were actually a lot better to create manipulators for. So we kind of combined them and made a base out of Atron modules with a kind of an arm built from Odin modules on top. And then for the gripper, we used, you know, the fine-grained resolution, if you can say so, of the Lego pieces and build a gripper that precisely matched the object we're supposed to pick up.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain this Odin robot? Because this is a new robot that you guys are designing. Can you tell us, give us a visual picture of what it looks like?
So basically, it looks mostly like a lattice structure of some kind of what do you call that? Atoms in a lattice structure, right? So like a salt or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you have what we call joints located in this three-dimensional grid, and these joints are connected by links, and that creates this airy three-dimensional structure. And then each module in this system do different things. So some modules incorporate linear actuators, other include batteries, other include processing power, others have sensors, and so on. So the special about this robot is that each module basically have a specific function, as opposed to being able to solve the entire task by itself.
Mm-hmm. So do you think this is maybe the way of the future to make more heterogeneous robots, or not necessarily?
Yes, I think, and I think this is something which is shared by most people in the community now, is that in order to solve real tasks, we really need heterogeneous robots. You do need a wide range of sensors and actuators, and you can't put all these sensors and actuators into a module and then, you know, make a lot of copies of this module, because this module will basically be way too expensive and heavy to be useful. So therefore, it's very obvious that you want to split it up and have functionality divided across a number of modules. Then the real question right now is how do you want to split the functionality? I mean, how much functionality should each module have? Mm-hmm. Should they have as little as possible, and then you always have to combine modules to make a functioning robot, or should they all have, you know, a lot more functionality and basically become maybe a mobile robot on their own?
Does this affect at all self-reconfiguration? Your old robots, they were all the same and they could change shape on the fly. If you suddenly have all different types of robots, is that still possible?
So that's a good question. I mean, so if you have, so if they all have the same physical shape and connector morphology, I mean, they can connect to each other, then you're okay. I mean, then you can get self-reconfiguration, but you can still get the heterogeneity because you can inside put different sensors. So still, you know, if you want to have a self-reconfigurable heterogeneous robot, you have to keep some part of the module fixed, and then you can make the rest specialized for that particular type of module.
Going along the same line, maybe, is that even useful, being self-reconfigurable? I mean, for direct applications right now, is it useful that you could, that the robot can change its own shape, or is it okay just that a human goes and switches things around?
So it depends. I think it depends on the application again. So I think that self-reconfiguration, I mean, being able to do that comes at a high cost. I mean, the modules that can do this today are fairly complex and fairly heavy and costly, basically. So for you to build a robot like that, your application has to require it. So a typical example is this planetary exploration where you are somewhere, you have your robot somewhere on Mars, and you just need to change its shape a little bit to be able to crawl into a tunnel of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly much cheaper than to send your self-reconfigurable robot to Mars to solve that task.
Yeah.
Whereas if we are talking about using modular robots on the factory floor, then of course it's probably more easy and simpler just to use a human in the loop to basically change the way modules are connected.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another area where we are exploring, because another way to change shape is through deformation. So this is something we have included in this new Odin robot is that rather than changing shape by having modules wander around, it changed shape by deforming the structure. So all modules have a kind of a spring mechanism built in, so they're able to kind of deform to the overall structure of the system, and thereby the system as a whole can deform.
That's really interesting. So where do you see the future? Say your future. Where do you think this Odin robot's going to go? What's going to be coming out of your lab in the next 2 or 3 years?
I think there would be basically two tracks, because I think right now the technology is really mature to try to head for application, and I think this is what quite a number of labs are doing. There's University of Pennsylvania and there's University of Southern California are very active in trying to do this as well as us. And then there's the other part, which is the fundamental research. And this is really about coming up with new fundamental hardware that can change the equation for us. For instance, there's Carnegie Mellon University and Intel Research Pittsburgh. They're working on trying to make modules from silicon wafers, so they can basically use some of Intel's chip production technology and produce chips that kind of curl up into a ball once it's released from the plate, and they hope to succeed in making modules that way. And that's a completely different kind of modules at a completely different scale. Mm-hmm. Another approach is go through chemistry and biology and use these vesicles, which is a kind of cell membranes, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So basically create modules out of these things and then use that as a foundation for modular robotics. So I think that's where we'll see most development, is that we'll see this drive for, you know, basic research, trying to make new realizations of modular robots. And then at the same time, we'll see a lot of development on the application side. Basically, software engineering becomes more important. How do we make all these distributed systems of modules act coherently and so on?
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like there's still a lot to come from modular robotics in the near future. So we're all excited to see it. Thank you very much, Casper. It was a pleasure talking to you. And I hope we get to speak with you sometime in the future and see some great things coming out of your lab.
Yeah, thank you.
Casper Stoy is one of Europe's leading researchers in modular robotics, but let's see what's going on down under. Sabine had a chance to speak with Robert Fitch, who's working on simulating self-reconfigurable robots made out of literally millions of modules at a massive scale out of Sydney.
Hi, Robert. Welcome to Robots.
Thank you.
You work at the Australian Centre for Field Robotics in Sydney. What type of field robots is your centre working on?
The Australian Centre for Field Robotics works with generally large robots, such as robots that you might use in industrial applications. So they work with cargo handling robots, for example, large robots that weigh 20 tons that move around containers, usually off of, you know, shipping containers that also weigh 20 tons. So they're very large machines. They also do a lot of work in mining, mining robots. So they might automate machines that are very large trucks. But they do a variety of things. So being a field robotics center, they have applications in underwater situations, in aerial vehicles, and also ground vehicles.
So you found a niche in this center with your self-reconfigurable modular robots. What are the applications you think these robots can do?
Well, it's interesting that even though there's no modular robots research going on at ACFR other than myself, it turns out there is a history of working in modular robots. The lab director, Hugh Durant-White, studied a modular system in the early 90s, which is very interesting because he applied a lot of the decentralized data fusion and sensor management techniques, which are now used in all these field applications, applied to a modular system. So in his case, these techniques work for teams of robots, so teams of airplanes, for example. But you could apply similar things to modular robots, where the different modules are physically connected instead of just being connected by communication.
Maybe can you explain what you mean by a self-reconfigurable modular robot?
Sure. So a self-reconfiguring robot is a robot that can change its shape. And the reason you like to change shape is for versatility. So you can match the physical structure of the robot to the task at hand. So the robot itself is constructed of many modules, so independent physical devices that can connect together. And they can autonomously disconnect and reconnect to other modules. So autonomously means by themselves, so of their own planning and control.
Can you maybe give an application, a concrete application for this, for which this would be useful?
Sure. I think a good application is actually some of the work that you're doing here at the EPFL in terms of the reconfiguring furniture. So in this case, you might want to have a chair that can turn into a table when you need one. Or you can have a chair that can change shape and kind of conform to your body better. So it's a kind of a personalized version of furniture. So you can imagine a whole room made of this that just takes on whatever shape and configuration that you need for the moment and can do this all autonomously.
So this is interesting. We just spoke with Kasper Stoy, who is looking at, with his Odin robot, how he can put different modules, heterogeneous modules together and have them achieve different tasks as well. But they're not necessarily self-reconfiguring. Would you say these two different types of robots apply to different tasks, or could self-reconfiguring robots do the trick also for the other applications?
Well, under the category of modular robots in general, you have reconfiguring robots that you change shape manually, so we can call those manually reconfiguring robots, or you have self-reconfiguring robots that change shape on their own, and they can both be used for different applications. There's a difficulty in self-reconfiguring robots in terms of the connection and disconnection mechanism is an open problem in science. So it's very challenging to build reliable connectors that work in the ways they need to work, and also have enough strength to build the structures that you need to build. So many times you don't need self-reconfiguration for a particular task, and you can use a robot that's just simply manually reconfiguring. Both of these systems share a lot of the scientific challenges. So often researchers will work on both types of systems. I prefer to work in self-reconfiguring robots, but the others are interesting as well.
So during your presentation today at the EPFL, you showed us a video of your self-reconfigurable robot in simulation. It's basically a cube which is able to sort of fluidly move through obstacles, etc. Can you maybe give us a visual idea of what this looks like?
Sure. So the idea that I was talking about was using this reconfiguring capability for the task of locomotion or moving around in the world. So the type of locomotion that I was describing is similar to water flowing. So if you imagine a waterfall, the water sort of flows around obstacles very, very nicely. And this is similar to what the robot does. So the individual modules are moving on top of each other, moving across the surface of each other. And if there's an obstacle in the way, they just tend to flow around it. So in one of the simulations that I showed, the robot started off in a large cube, so a large dense structure. And it had to move through basically a field of columns. So they were tall vertical obstacles that were too tall for it to climb over. And because the robot is working on the basis of sort of local interactions with the environment, the modules found spaces between these column obstacles and sort of oozed through them and then reconnected to each other on the other side. So it was as if the robot was an amoeba or a blob and just oozed through these obstacles and reconnected on the other side and again formed a solid structure, a cube.
How many modules are we talking about here?
So the planning algorithms that I showed scale very nicely to very large systems, and that's a main goal in this field is to build algorithms and systems that can support hundreds, thousands, or maybe even millions of modules. So the simulations that I showed today, we've demonstrated with systems of over 2 million modules.
And what are the main challenges in achieving this?
So the main challenges in working with this kind of a robot are in terms of scalability. So you'd like to have algorithms that work simply on local information. So there's too many modules to have one central leader because of various reasons. So you'd like to have what's called a decentralized approach. So if you think of, in biology, you can think of swarms of bees or groups of ants that exhibit some global behavior, but each component of this system is acting locally. So in my algorithms, the individual modules make decisions on what to do just based on their local state. So information that they could sense directly with their sensors, or they can communicate with their immediate neighbors to get information that they need. And then as a whole, when you compose all these local interactions, the global system exhibits the global behavior that you'd like. So in this case, it would be locomotion.
So I see two main problems, I guess. One would be having the module completely split when you go across obstacles. Mm-hmm. And the second is how do you move these blocks basically from one point to another on the robot? And mm-hmm. this all can be done in a local and simple manner.
Those are good questions, because those are two of the main challenges. So you're right. The first challenge that you mentioned is called connectivity, the connectivity problem. So when you have this global structure, certain local motions can actually disconnect the whole robot. So moving certain modules, say in the middle of a structure, could potentially create a situation where you've split the robot into two groups that can no longer communicate. And although in some cases you might want to do that intentionally, you definitely do not want to do this unintentionally. So a big part of my work is coming up with methods to overcome this. And what I talked about today was a simple algorithm that kind of does a local search. So it just examines its local environment and tries to find a local structure that, if it could basically keep some of its neighbors in place, then that guarantees that that module can then move safely without disconnecting the whole structure globally. And essentially what it does is it does a local search, and when it finds such a structure, it asks the modules to stay put, so that you could think of it as locking them until it can move. And the nice thing about this is that this allows for many modules to do this in parallel. So if I'm trying to move and you're trying to move, we can share the same locked structure. And so that enables many, many modules to move at the same time. The second question was,
how do you make a module move from one position on the robot to another? How is the plan? I imagine there are so many different states. Is there a way to get by this without maybe hand designing all the possibilities?
Right. So that's a good point. The physical mechanisms of these modules can be complex. So they can have kind of complex kinematics. So one approach is to just think about it and just by hand develop some local rules or a local plan to move the module from one position locally to another position. And this is an approach that I've taken in the past. And although it works well, it's a lot of work. And as I mentioned, I live in Sydney. I'd rather be at the beach. So instead of doing this by hand, I'd like to come up with an algorithm that will learn this. So I'd like the computer to do this for me. And so with some techniques from that I borrowed from reinforcement learning, very simple reinforcement learning techniques, I'm looking at ways for the system to in the first case, interact with the simulator to try to learn the actual plans. So it basically tries different combinations of actions in a principled way and remembers the result in a directed way so that it can efficiently learn what I, in the first case, had to code by hand.
Now you're trying to go from the simulation back to reality with your modular robot. What type of a robot do you want to build?
So my vision is to build a robot that can be used in a field application such as the other applications that we work on at the Australian Centre for Field Robotics. So this would be a fielded self-reconfiguring robot. And this is a big vision because there's a lot of technical problems that need to be solved in order to get there. But there's some interesting things that we're working on in terms of using sensing. So up till now, people have worked on various problems in this field, but not so much on using sensors. And so my idea is to use a very popular sensor, a type of radar, on a modular robot. And so this particular radar is called an ultra-wideband radar, and it can be made very small and very power efficient. And so you can imagine putting some number of these radars on the modular robot. And with these radars, you can do some very cool things. So you can basically take an image of an area through walls. So you can think of it as similar to an X-ray, not using X-rays, but in a similar way to how X-rays work. And you can reconstruct a cross-section of, say, a building, or if you think about a search and rescue application, if there's been an earthquake and there's rubble and there's a person trapped, then you can imagine sort of surrounding this area and using these sensors to create a cross-section that can be used to help rescuers know how to extract this person from where they're trapped. And the reason the modular robot is a great platform for this is because to do this, you need to take sensor readings from a number of different angles. And because in the modular robot, you can have many of these sensors, you can do that in parallel. So you could do this more quickly.
And I guess you can ooze through the different areas where you have to go, like in a disaster area.
Exactly. And then you can also use the locomotion capability of this system to position these sensors where you'd like them to go. So you can use the versatility of the robot to help in the sensing task.
So why not go towards a robot which has limbs rather than this self-reconfiguring shape to move around?
Well, the nice thing about the self-reconfiguring robot is if you need limbs in a certain task, then theoretically you could just grow them or make them. And the nice thing about that is if in some cases you need limbs or you need a type of a walking robot, but in other cases you might need more of a snake robot that can crawl through a small hole. So with this type of system, you can do it all. You can grow legs when you need to, you can crawl through a small opening if you need to, and you could climb over large structures if that's what the task requires.
One of the main challenges on a hardware side that I see with these robots is that you're going to have so many movements of your modules back and forth. They'll have to be exercising different forces depending on how they're configured in the robot. I mean, does this require huge advances in materials, in actuators, etc.?
Well, that's a good question, and it's still an open question. At the moment, we're trying to use, of course, the actuators and materials that we have. And there's still a lot to explore in this area. So it might turn out that we need to invent or use materials that are yet to be invented. But we're still in the process of working with what we've got and building systems that work with the materials that we have. And I think we can do some interesting things with existing actuators and materials.
And how do you see the future of self-reconfigurable modular robots?
So, in the future, I hope to see my vision come to life. So I'd like to see these fielded robots. But I think there's going to be applications in areas that we haven't even thought of yet. So it's hard to predict this kind of thing. But I'd like to see them used in as I mentioned, this reconfigurable furniture application, in the field robots application, and then maybe in some less exotic applications, used in industry, or perhaps reconfiguring scaffolding when you're doing construction on Earth and even doing some construction in space. So you can imagine transporting these modules bit by bit into a remote location such as space. And then once they're there, they can reconfigure into different structures, larger structures, that help to build other things. So they could make a scaffolding that other robots or people could use to help them build structures in space or in a lunar outpost or something like that.
Thanks, Robert, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you.
That's all we have today for Robots. For more information on today's guests, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Connect your modules with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.